This message is a presentation of Pinnacle Baptist Church and the preaching ministry of Pastor Ray McBerry. Other messages like this are available online at pinnaclebaptist.com. The church is located at 2517 High Falls Road in Griffin, Georgia. If you're in the area, we would love for you to visit us this Sunday. Now, here's today's message.
Well, good morning and welcome to Sunday School class. We are in Exodus chapter number 8. We're looking at the plagues of Egypt. And I think you all probably already know this, but how many plagues in all are we going to see before we get through with this? Yeah. 10 plagues, that's right. And so we're really just getting started with the plagues on Egypt. How many have we had so far? Two.
Yeah, the
two so far, that's right. The first one was the Nile turned to what?
Blood.
Turned to blood. And then the second one was what, Alex?
The frogs,
that's right. Invasion of the frogs. Boy, that would make an exciting movie. It reminds me of, it sounds like one of those movies they would have had on Channel 36 when I was a boy growing up. Those, I don't even think you could call them B-rated movies. They were pretty pitiful, but they were still, when we were a kid, we didn't care anyway. Invasion of the Blob and all those other crazy movies. I can just see one, Invasion of the Frogs. Yes, sir?
Explain frog, turn that now into blood. That was, you could explain that.
Yeah, that was certainly a supernatural act of God, no doubt. And so we saw that God allowed Aaron and Moses to be able to perform these in the sight of Pharaoh. And the great thing is, God is having Moses tell Pharaoh ahead of time what he's going to do. So even though some of these things we're going to see were natural occurring things in the land of Egypt at different seasons of the year, the Lord is making sure that Pharaoh knows exactly when they're going to occur to remove any doubt from Pharaoh's mind that these are just coincidences. Because isn't that what the skeptical world does even today? If God does something in my life or your life or in a big way and in all of our lives, the skeptics will say, well, that was just a coincidence. And we still have the liberal skeptics around today. But God wanted to make sure that Pharaoh knew exactly when they were going to happen, because God wanted him to know that it was the God of Israel that was performing these miracles, so to speak. So here we are back now in Exodus chapter 8. We've gotten the frogs there. We read, I believe, down through verse 7. We're going to pick up with verse 8 this morning. Chapter 8, verse 8. Then Pharaoh called for Moses and Aaron and said, "Entreat the Lord that he may take away the frogs from me and from my people, and I will let the people go that they may do sacrifice unto the Lord." So here Pharaoh says, okay, I'll give you what you asked for. I'll let you go. I'll let you go into the wilderness 3 days' journey and worship your God if you just get rid of these frogs. Like Alex pointed out last week, and I think Kevin the week before that, it's interesting that these magicians were able to do or appear to do the same kind of things that Aaron and Moses are doing, but they're not able to get rid of the problem, which is, of course, what Pharaoh would have wanted them to do, and they're not able to do that. Verse number 9, "And Moses said unto Pharaoh, glory over me." Now, what he means when he says glory over me is he's saying, in other words, you receive the honor at my expense. You get the honor, but he says, glory over me. When shall I entreat for thee and for thy servants and for thy people to destroy the frogs from thee and thy houses, that they may remain in the river only? Moses is doing the same kind of thing I normally do when I get on the phone with the phone company or the power company. Whenever there's a problem, I always try to start out being nice. And the longer the conversation goes and the less action I get, Brother Kevin's smiling because I know he does the exact same thing. The longer that conversation goes and I'm not getting the problem fixed, and the person on the other end doesn't seem to care whether it gets fixed, the less nice I am and the more I start, instead of asking them what to do, I start telling them what to do. And then if they don't fix the problem, I ask for their supervisor. Well, Moses is, he's kind of being gracious here in what he says to Pharaoh when he says, glory over me. He says, you get the honor. And then he asks him the question, when is it, O Pharaoh, that you want me to get rid of these frogs? So he's asking him, when do you want me to do this? Now, this is kind of a rhetorical question because Pharaoh's going to say the same thing that you and I are going to say. How about yesterday? Yeah, I want it done now. Pharaoh says, okay, do it tomorrow. Look at verse 10. He said, tomorrow. And he said, be it according to thy word, that thou mayest know that there is none like unto the Lord our God. So Pharaoh says, have it done tomorrow. And Moses says, okay, you got it. We're going to make sure it's done tomorrow, and we're going to do it tomorrow so that you will know that it is the God of Israel that did it and not just some coincidence. Of course, Pharaoh could have picked any other day of the week, but tomorrow was a good day when you got frogs in the bedchamber and in the ovens. So, but look back at the end of verse 9, what Moses asked him was not to have the frogs all take off back to the river. He asked him to destroy the frogs from thee and thy houses, that they may remain in the river only. He didn't say, okay, when do you want me to ask the Lord to get rid of them and send them all hopping back to the river? No, Moses said, when do you want me to have the Lord destroy them so that only the ones in the river remain? Now, there's a big difference there, and we're about to read about it. So let's continue on verse 11. And the frogs shall depart from thee and from thy houses and from thy servants and from thy people. They shall remain in the river only. And Moses and Aaron went out from Pharaoh, and Moses cried unto the Lord because of the frogs which he had brought against Pharaoh. And the Lord did according to the word of Moses. And the frogs died out of the houses, out of the villages, and out of the fields, and they gathered them together upon heaps, and the land, what? Stank. Now, it stank. That's the past tense, but I know when I was a kid growing up, if something really stunk really bad, that's what we said. That stank. Apparently, heaps of dead frogs really stink. And so God did exactly as Moses asked. There's one thing that I think worth noticing here, that this is a man of God. He's praying something according to the will of God, and God grants his prayer. That's the same way we're supposed to pray, by the way, in the New Testament too. You can pray and ask God to bring a plague of frogs or get rid of some frogs or bring the rain or whatever. But, you know, the key is, number one, he was a righteous man. And number two, he's praying in the will of God, and God answered the prayer. It's the same thing that the Bible teaches us in the New Testament. Jesus said, you have not because ye ask not, or because ye ask amiss to consume it upon your own lust. In other words, you either aren't asking, or you're asking for something for selfish reasons. Now, we're not supposed to be asking for things for selfish reasons, but we are supposed to ask God for the things that we need. And the Bible says in the book of James, the effectual, fervent prayer of a righteous man availeth much. That's right, Miss Mary. You know, God is going to listen to the prayers of a righteous man or woman before he's going to listen to the prayers of someone who's, you know, maybe they're saved, but they're not living for him. It's the same way you are, or you were when your kids were growing up and they were little and you took them to the grocery store. When you got to the checkout line, well, if they'd been good all the way through the store and behaved, you might have bought them one of those toys off the rack that they always put right there by the register. And Miss Kelly, I know Jake probably never wanted any of those toys, but if you have a son or daughter and they pitch a fit all throughout the store, I don't want to be here, and they're grabbing stuff off the shelves and pitching a temper tantrum, you're probably not very likely to buy them whatever that play purdy is right there by the checkout counter when you get to the end, because they don't deserve that, and if you reward them for the wrong behavior, you're just reinforcing the wrong behavior and teaching them to do wrong. So God is the same way when He wants to answer our prayers, and He answered this prayer for Moses because he was the right kind of man, his heart was in the right place, and he was asking something according to the will of God, not for his own selfish reasons. Yes, sir?
He hears all prayers and consideration stars, but the righteous prayers more takes priority.
I think you're right, Brother Lawrence. He hears all the prayers, but just because he hears them doesn't mean he's going to answer them the way we want them answered, because the consideration begins. Because he wants what's best for us, for our good, and for his glory. So, the Bible says that he has all the frogs die in the houses, the villages, and out of the fields. They all die. So the Egyptians do what you'd do if you had a bunch of dead frogs lying around. They piled them up in heaps to get them out of the house and out of the barn and all that. Piled them up. It says they gathered them together upon heaps and the land stank. Now, I want to remind you of something that we looked at last week. You know, this situation in Egypt, the Egyptians, obviously, like anybody, they treasured the land that they lived on. We're the same way. This land that we have, it's part of who we are. And especially as Southerners, we just, you know, we sing songs. How many country songs are there about this place in Dixie and across the South? We sing songs about the Okefenokee Swamp, about the Georgia Pines, about the Chattahoochee River. You know, all, what's that?
The red clay,
yeah, the Shenandoah Valley, all kinds of songs about this place because it's a part of who we are. I'm sure the Egyptians felt the same way about their land, but we have now seen in two different chapters, two different plagues, and two different instances where the place that the Egyptians loved so dearly stank. Remember when the Nile turned to blood, what did it say? The river stank. The source of life for Egypt, the gift of the Nile River itself, God made even the Nile to stink in the nostrils of the people. Now the very land on which they live stinks in their nostrils. I just thought that was very ironic, very interesting that God made both their river and their land to stink in their own nostrils, in the nostrils of the people who lived there. Verse 15, but when Pharaoh saw that there was respite, that was some relief, what did he do? It says he hardened his heart and hearkened not unto them as the Lord had said. So he did what you and I expected he was going to do, what we've already seen him do. He hardened his heart, he changed his mind, and refused to let the people go.
After he got what he wanted.
After he got what he wanted, yep. He's not different than people in the 21st century, is he? As soon as he gets what he wants, why, then he's not going to budge an inch. He's not going to keep his promises, not going to do what he said he was going to do. He's only after what he wants. And God has not yet gotten his attention good enough that he's going to follow through and keep the promise that he made. He hardened his heart and hearkened not unto them, as the Lord had said. God had already told Moses that was going to happen. So, we've got two of the plagues. The Nile turned to blood, and then frogs. Number three is coming up, verse 16. And the Lord said unto Moses, say unto Aaron, stretch out thy rod and smite the dust of the land, that it may become lice throughout all the land of Egypt. Now, I'm going to tell you this word lice, it's translated lice in our King James Bible. Lice are tiny little bugs. Now, there are some Hebrew scholars who say these tiny little bugs that's intended here, the word could also be translated gnats. But, you know, gnats might be a little bigger than what you and I think of when we think of lice, but it was obviously what those people in that day thought of as lice. It was just tiny little bugs. And so whether it was the kind of lice that you and I think of as lice, like head lice, or the kind of lice that is what some Hebrew scholars say were little flying bugs, gnats, either way, those would not be pleasant little bugs. I know sometimes during the summer, if I go outside in the evening after I've already gotten my shower and I'm ready to relax a little bit, if I have to walk outside to do something or get something out of the car, sometimes just walking out to the car and back in the evenings when it's hot like this, I end up, when I get back to the house, I feel like I have little creepy crawlies in my hair, and that my head starts itching. Whether it's caused by bugs or it's all in my head, I don't know. But there are times just walking out there in the summertime like this, I'll just go get another shower again and wash my hair again so my head doesn't feel like it's itching and crawling with whatever they are. But if you've ever lived here in Georgia and you've been below the gnat line, you know what it's like to deal with gnats. So whether they were lice like head lice or whether they were gnats like you and I think of as gnats, neither one are a pleasant thing. By the way, is there anybody here that does not know where the gnat line is in Georgia? Never heard of the gnat line? All right, let me show you. Now, my map of Georgia is not going to... it's going to look about like all my other maps, but I'm going to try to draw one for you here. So we can see, I can show you where the gnat line is. All right, here's Atlanta. I won't use some of the other names I use for it. Here's Macon, here's Augusta, and here's Columbus. Remember that Mac. Macon, Augusta, Columbus. There's an imaginary line across middle Georgia there from Macon, Augusta, and Columbus. Sometimes it's referred to as the fall line, because that's the geographical point at which the soil changes in Georgia. It becomes more sandy from there south. And it also is the place at which the rivers begin to fall off sharply in elevation as well. But it's also lovingly known to those of us from Georgia as the gnat line. And so if you travel south of the gnat line, if you go below Columbus or below Macon or below Augusta, anywhere here in South Georgia, I assure you, you will become acquainted with the gnats. And I don't know what the magic is about that. Maybe it has something to do with the sandy soil, that where the soil changes there. Yeah, Savannah. And really anywhere below the gnat line, you'll have to deal with hordes of gnats. Yes, sir.
Also the edge of the plateau.
That's true. That is the edge of the Piedmont Plateau. I believe you're right. But one of those things about gnats, first of all, they always like to fly in your eyes, your nose, and your ears. And, of course, they it's kind of like a little stinging bite when they do bite you, but they just, even if they don't bite you, just the fact that they constantly are flying in your eyes and up your nose and in your ears, gnats are troublesome, aggravating, and they just come in swarms, and there's nothing you can do to get rid of them. If you're there below the gnat line, you're going to have to contend with them if you're outside. But the gnats that lived in the land of Egypt would have been even worse than the gnats you and I are familiar with in South Georgia. Because the gnats in Egypt, there was one particular variety that was very common that, of course, they would go for the moist places around your face too, like your eyes. But some of these gnats in Egypt would literally, on people and the animals, would latch onto the very edge of the eyelid and fasten onto it and begin to suck the blood out of it, kind of like a mosquito, and would literally cause big sores. And it is said that people there in the land of Egypt, especially in ancient times, they had an inordinate number of blind people in ancient Egypt because of these particular kind of gnats. And so you can imagine how horrible this situation would have been whether they're the kind of lice you and I think of as head lice and body lice, or whether they're these gnats that are attacking your face and your eyes, neither one would have been a good situation. Verse 17, "And they did so, for Aaron stretched out his hand with his rod and smote the dust of the earth, and it became lice in man and in beast. All the dust of the land became lice throughout all the land of Egypt." In other words, they were so small, so tiny, it was just as though the dust itself had attacked the very people of Egypt. Yes, sir?
Not the sand, but the dust.
Well, the dust, yep, just tiny, tiny particles. "And the magicians did so with their enchantments to bring forth lice, but they could not. So there were lice upon man and upon beast." This is the first time we've encountered this now. Verse 18 says, "The magicians did so with their enchantments, trying to get the lice to come out, but it says, but they could not." I guess the rest of the people of Egypt were probably saying, "Well, we're thankful for that. They turned more of the water into blood, and they brought more frogs. We didn't need any more of any of those things. We sure didn't need any more lice. So just keep it to yourself." But the magicians tried to reproduce the same thing that Moses and Aaron had done, but they could not. This is the first of the plagues we see that they cannot. T.R.?
So, in one of the plagues, obviously God told them what to do, and I'm not talking about that plague because you're getting to that. So the children of Israel were spared from it. But depending on whether or not the children of Israel were affected by the plagues like the Egyptians were, which quite possibly they weren't, I don't know. But the Bible doesn't specifically say one way or another. But if they weren't, that could also lead to belief that the magicians were trying to do the same to affect the children of Israel if they were not affected, to put a fire under Moses and Aaron. But that might have been one of the first plagues that if they had recreated it and God had allowed that to happen, it would have been bad towards the children of Israel, and so God didn't allow it to happen.
Now, T.R., I have been studying my Bible since I was about 5 or 6 years old. I'm 55. So for 50 years, I've been reading this story and studying this, and I have never once thought of what you just said. And what T.R. is saying is that, maybe these other things we've seen happen so far, maybe they did not happen when Moses and Aaron stretched forth the rod. Maybe these other things had not happened in the land of Goshen, where the children of Israel live. The Bible does not tell us about these first two plagues, and we have not read it about this one either, whether it occurred where the children of Israel live in the land of Egypt. But it is possible that when the magicians pulled out their tricks to do, maybe that was the only place in Egypt where those things had not happened with Moses and Aaron. So T.R. may be right. Maybe those were the places that the magicians were trying to perform those things and cause the frogs and cause the water to turn into blood. T.R., I don't know, but that's a possibility because it certainly they were able to do those things, and maybe they were trying to bring this lice upon the land of Goshen too, but they could not. Yes, sir?
Option is for the children of Israel's lifestyle to mute the effects of the lice on their bodies. The lifestyles could have.
I don't think that's the case because Brother Lawrence is saying that maybe the lifestyle and the hygiene of the children of Israel would have prevented these flies and everything, the lice. I don't think that's it. And I say that because we know that good hygiene and habits did nothing for the Egyptians. Well, preacher, how do you know that? Well, let me tell you, I did a little more digging in preparing for today. The priests in the Egyptian religion, in order to be able to perform their rituals in the Egyptian religion, they had a certain group of priests that had to be totally shaven from head to toe. No head hair, no body hair, totally clean shaven from head to toe. and had to, they had very strict rules they had to follow about different times of the day. They had to completely wash from the crown of their head to the soles of their feet. And these particular priests were the only ones allowed to do certain rituals within the Egyptian religion. But we read nothing about them being exempted just because they were clean and hygienic. So I think I would have thought the same thing Brother Lawrence just suggested, except apparently even the priests of the Egyptian religion who were very hygienic were still suffering from the same thing. You know, sometimes when people, kids get head lice, you take them and you just cut all their hair off if you have to get rid of the lice. Well, these were men that would have been totally bald. You've seen some of the movies of ancient Egypt where their priests are bald, and apparently this did nothing to alleviate the problem. It says the magicians did so with their enchantments to bring forth lice, but they could not. So there were lice upon man and upon beast. Then the magicians said unto Pharaoh, look what they say. This is the finger of God. And Pharaoh's heart was hardened, and he hearkened not unto them as the Lord had said. When the magicians can't do the same thing, they can't replicate this particular plague, all of a sudden the magicians themselves, you begin to notice they're a little unnerved about what's going on too. Because the magicians themselves tell Pharaoh, their boss, this is the finger of God. It's the same as saying this is the hand of God at work. Now, you might say, well, maybe that was just for their job security and their physical safety by saying, hey, there's a good reason we can't do this. Only the gods can do this. In fact, the word for God here, when they said this is the finger of God, the word for God here is actually the name we see for our God in the book of Genesis at the event of creation, Elohim, which is actually plural. It means gods, plural. And we know that when God created everything, and God at the Tower of Babel said, let us go down. God is communing with Himself. God the Father, God the Son, God the Holy Spirit. And so our God is one God, but He is in the book of Genesis on more than one occasion referred to in the plural form as Elohim. But it literally means God's plural. So the Egyptian magicians they're not crediting this to the God of Israel. They're just saying it's the finger of the gods, plural. That is, it's the finger of the deities that are doing this, and we have no control over it. So maybe they were saying it's some of the Egyptian gods that are doing this, or maybe they were saying this is some of those desert gods of the Hebrews that they worship, that they're wanting to go worship to 3 days' journey into the wilderness. But whatever the situation is, this is the first moment in the story that we've seen the Egyptian magicians themselves acknowledge that this is a supernatural act by the gods and something they could not reproduce. And yet look at verse 19. Pharaoh's heart was hardened and he hearkened not unto them. Pharaoh was still not changed. He was still not going to budge an inch. Even his own magicians are saying this is an act of the gods, but Pharaoh would not be moved. Now that...
He's believed by himself. He thinks he's a god too.
But Kevin's right. He believes he's a god himself.
So this is a showdown between him and...
I think you hit the nail on the head. Pharaoh views this as a showdown between himself, the representative of the Egyptian gods, and these gods of these desert nomadic shepherds, the Hebrews that are living in his land. And he, as the representative of the Egyptian pantheon of gods, is not going to give in this showdown to these Hebrew gods, these nomadic shepherd people and their gods, which of course would have been viewed as inferior to the Egyptian gods.
God was to say, why didn't God just change Pharaoh's mind? That's exactly what he's doing.
God is in the process of doing that. You're exactly right. Look at verse 20. And the Lord said unto Moses, rise up early in the morning and stand before Pharaoh. Lo, he cometh forth to the water. And say unto him, thus saith the Lord, let my people go, that they may serve me. So apparently, from what we've already gathered in a couple of these situations, it was the custom of Pharaoh to go down by the river every morning. He was basically going down there to wash off, refresh himself. He probably had his own pool right there at the edge of the river where the waters were brought into his pool for him to bathe and just to cool off. Living here in Georgia with the temperature like it is right now, 90 to 100 degrees every day, you probably appreciate when you have a chance to go dip in the pool and cool off a bit as well. And so every morning, apparently, it was his custom to go down by the river. Verse number 21, thus saith the Lord, let my people go that they may serve me. Else, if thou wilt not let my people go, behold, I will send swarms of flies upon thee, and upon thy servants, and upon thy people, and into thy houses, and the houses of the Egyptians shall be full of swarms of flies, and also the ground whereon they are. Now, Kevin and Kelly told me just about a week ago about a problem they're having with a next door neighbor and some things going on over there next door that's causing a fly problem. But flies are, they're not just pesky, but they're horrible, and especially in swarms. After Sunday school, you can get Brother Kevin to tell you about the numbers of flies they're dealing with at their house because of the neighbors. But just everywhere. And you can imagine all over your food, all over your person. And you know, there are different kinds of flies. There are what we call the common house fly, and they're pesky, but they're not nearly as bad as a horse fly. At least that's what we called them as a boy growing up. Horse flies are a whole lot bigger than a house fly, and they bite. And their bites are about as bad as a bee sting sometimes. And they are as bad with the people and the animals. And so here Moses is saying, if you don't let my people go, the Lord is going to bring swarms of flies upon thee and upon thy servants and thy houses. Look at verse 22. And I will sever in that day the land of Goshen, in which my people dwell, that no swarms of flies shall be there, to the end thou mayest know that I am the Lord in the midst of the earth. And I will put a division between my people and thy people. Tomorrow shall this sign be. So again, like TR was saying, we don't really know in these first few plagues if God had kind of created a boundary around the land of Goshen where the children of Israel lived or not. But God is saying, in this instance, he is going to put a division between them. So there's going to be no doubt that it is the God of Israel doing this thing. You know, the magicians here have said, you know, it's the gods that are doing these things. But they didn't go so far as to say these are all happening by the God of the Israelites. But God's about to remove any doubt. He's going to make it clear this is not just some gods and goddesses in general, but it's the God of Israel who's doing these things. And since you didn't want to acknowledge that, I'm going to make it clear to you. So I'm going to put a dividing line. I'm going to put a boundary right here around the land of Goshen. And everywhere in the land of Goshen where my people live, there won't be any swarms of flies. But everywhere else in Egypt will be swarms of flies starting tomorrow. Yes, sir?
Division and discontent growing in the land of Israel. In the land of Goshen.
That, in the land of Egypt, that's right. Discontent, I'm sure, is beginning to rise among the people of Egypt. And it's about to get worse.
Unrest.
Verse 24, and the Lord did so. And there came a grievous swarm of flies into the house of Pharaoh. and into his servants' houses and into all the land of Egypt. The land was corrupted by reason of the swarm of flies. You ever try to eat a peanut butter and jelly sandwich with flies all over the place? It's not easy. You don't want to eat flies, and you don't want them landing on your food. You go try to have a picnic, and you got flies everywhere. Or you go sit in the barbecue restaurant that has a screen door with a hole in it, and the flies are coming through the hole. You know, the flies are going to land on your food, and, you know, I don't want to get gross about it, but flies don't just land on your food so they can eat a bite. When they land, they do other things on your food, too. You might not be able to see it with your eyes, but I sure don't even want to think about what they're doing on my food when I'm about to eat. What's that?
They're laying eggs.
They're laying eggs and probably other stuff, too. Who wants to eat the eggs of these flies and whatever else they're leaving behind? Verse 25, and Pharaoh called for Moses and for Aaron and said, look, this time Pharaoh called for them. He didn't wait. He called for them. Go ye sacrifice to your God in the land. So Pharaoh calls Moses and Aaron. Obviously, we're beginning to make some headway because Moses calls for them this time and he says, go do your sacrificing and worship your God, but do it here in the land. In other words, he's saying you can have your 3 days off, but worship your God and stay right here in the land. Now, is that what God had told Moses to ask? No. He was supposed to ask to go 3 days journey into the wilderness. Pharaoh didn't say go your 3 days journey and worship and then come back. He said, no, worship your God, but just stay right here in the land. Verse 26, and Moses said, it is not meet so to do. That is, it's not a good thing to do that. Why? Well, he's about to tell us. For we shall sacrifice the abomination of the Egyptians to the Lord our God. Lo, shall we sacrifice the abomination of the Egyptians before their eyes? And will they not stone us? Moses said, you're not thinking here, Pharaoh. He said, we can't do what you just asked us to do. Because the sacrifice we do to our God would be an abomination in the sight of your people. And your people would all rise up to stone us, to slay us. Well, preacher, what was he talking about when he said this would be an abomination in the eyes of your people? Well, a couple of things come to mind. First of all, when the Egyptians offered the animal sacrifices in their rituals, they did it totally different than what we read about the children of Israel doing in the Old Testament. And that is that the Egyptians, you know, it was like you go into the meat market to buy food today at Winn-Dixie or wherever you go, and you know, they're very careful about making sure everything is sanitary. And the Egyptians, the animals they were sacrificing, the whole process from beginning to end was, if I could make a play on words, kosher. And they were very hygienic in the way they prepared, killed, and prepared the animals to offer sacrifice. Not so with the children of Israel. The children of Israel just slit their throat, collected the blood, and laid them up on the altar and offered a burnt sacrifice to God. We know that going all the way back before Moses' time in the Old Testament. But I think perhaps another reason this would have been an abomination to the Egyptians is that we know a little bit later on in the book of Exodus, one of the animals that God required the children of Israel to sacrifice was a bullock. What's a bullock? A young bull, a calf, but a bull. We've talked a little bit about this in other settings before, but one of the animals that was involved in the worship of the sun god of Egypt were prize bulls. And their bulls were treated differently than all the other animals in Egypt. The Egyptians, when they involved bulls in the worship of their god, the sun god. They weren't killing these prize bulls. They were treating them better than humans. They were dressing them up with ribbons all over their heads and their tails. They had a temple that was built north of Memphis, about right here, the ancient city of Heliopolis, which, by the way, was where Joseph's father-in-law lived 400 years before this, 400 some odd years. And that place at the city of On, O-N, the Greeks called it Heliopolis, they had built for these prize bulls this magnificent underground stable where the bulls would be cool, safe, and each one had his own stall. And several times a year they would be brought out and led through the streets in a parade as the physical embodiment of the sun god that the Egyptians worshipped. So Moses said, listen, if we worship our God the way we're supposed to worship our God, your people are going to think we're committing an abomination and they're going to come try to kill us. He said, we can't do that. Now, look what it says right after that. Verse 27. We will go 3 days' journey into the wilderness and sacrifice to the Lord our God as He shall command us. We're going to go 3 days out of here and we're going to sacrifice to Him the way He tells us to, not according to the customs of the Egyptians. You know, I know that our politicians, they all brag on how they're all good at compromising with each other up there on Capitol Hill. Compromise is never a good thing when you're dealing with principle. I notice here, God didn't compromise. Pharaoh's willing to compromise here a little bit. Don't you imagine he's like some of those liberals up there in Washington? Come on, we're willing to compromise a little bit. It's give and take. Why don't you go ahead and compromise a little too? But if you're standing on the right principle, anytime you compromise, you're doing wrong. And that's what the world is real good at, getting Christians to compromise. Brother, I'll take your question at the end, but if I don't keep moving, I'm not going to finish these last few verses. Look at the last few verses with me before we go. And Pharaoh said, I will let you go that ye may sacrifice to the Lord your God in the wilderness. Only ye shall not go very far away. Entreat for me. He said, listen, work with me here. Go on into the wilderness, but don't go too far. He said, work with me. Entreat for me. Verse 29. And Moses said, behold, I go out from thee, and I will entreat the Lord that the swarms of flies may depart from Pharaoh, from his servants, and from his people tomorrow. Again, telling him when it's going to happen. But let not Pharaoh deal deceitfully any more in not letting the people go to sacrifice to the Lord. Moses said, you've already done this before. You said you'd let us go, and then you changed your mind. Don't do that again. And Moses went out from Pharaoh and entreated the Lord. He begged on behalf of Pharaoh. And the Lord did according to the word of Moses. And he removed the swarms of flies from Pharaoh and from his servants and from his people. There remained not one. Boy, when God cleans up the place, he does it right. He cleaned up all of them. There was not even a single fly left. And Pharaoh hardened his heart at this time also. Neither would he let the people go. Now, did God know Pharaoh was going to harden his heart?
Yeah.
Oh yeah. God already knew what the outcome was going to be, but God's not through with Pharaoh. Yes, sir?
All God's asking up this point is a little respect and obedience.
Yeah, but he's not getting it from Pharaoh yet, is he?
No, sir.
But God's not through with Pharaoh. Dear Heavenly Father, thank you for a chance to study your word. I pray, Lord, help us to learn to listen and be obedient to you. I pray you'd bless in our coming service. In Jesus' name we ask it. Amen.